2-2 to Guerrero. Ground ball tap. Blanco lets it go by. Dubon fields. Throws the first in time. A no-hitter! Odell Blanco! Yainer Diaz, the first to jump into his arms. And the rest of his teammates come out to mob him. Odell Blanco has thrown the 17th no-hitter in Houston Astros history as the Astros defeat the Toronto Blue Jays 10-0. What a performance by the Astros for their first win of the season and for Joe Espada's first ever win as a big league manager.
Blanco just found out 6 days ago he was going to be in the rotation. Their fifth starter, fifth game of the season.
Tell you what, Barker, I have covered two perfect games.
I shouldn't be funny.
I've been in person. Two perfect games.
Mm-hmm.
I counted 9 no-hitters that I've been in person for.
Wow.
One of them was like, I threw the fifth. If I threw a fifth five-inning no-hitter in, then it'd be 10. None of them were as easy as Ronald Blanco's no-hitter of the Blue Jays last night.
Do you have any idea what that tells us?
I think it tells us.
Do you have any idea if the Jays lineup's any good? It is so early to be having this conversation. But I'm with you. He worked through that pretty easy.
It's 2 hours and a minute.
pretty easy.
When he
pitched out of the stretch like twice.
And yes, two walks to George Springer.
Yeah.
Bo wasn't in the lineup, of course. But there's an element of serendipity too, because when the closest you come to losing it is when Alejandro Kirk hits a ball up the middle that goes off your glove to the second baseman. I mean, that, Jose Altuve could just like jump shot the ball over to first base and beat Kirky by about, 13, 15 feet anyhow. There's an element of that. And yeah, John Schneider said no hitters are outliers. That's true. This is the earliest by date a no hitter's been thrown in Major League Baseball. That's really early to be no-hit by a 30-year-old dude who...
Nobody's ever heard of. Fans of the Astros are like, wait, who just threw a no-hitter?
See, you asked a question about what does it tell you about the lineup. And I don't think it tells me anything, except when a guy throws a pitch that he has thrown 9%, that he threw 9%, he threw 86 change-ups last year as a reliever. He threw 36 yesterday.
Yeah.
Round about the third inning, I might be scratching my head and going, that pregame scouting report we got? That wasn't very good. Maybe we ought to make an adjustment. That's what concerns me is by the fourth inning, I by that point, the Astros had scored a bunch of runs. I just saw the white flag being raised. It's really early to be quitting. And I saw a lot of guys who were in a hurry to get the hell out of there.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think a lineup that is telling us they are having trouble with glove side. That's the ball away that has a little wrinkle in it, or is something that's moving, that's being thrown like a fastball or a cutter. Or, something maybe backdooring, something away with a little change of speed that has a wrinkle in it, and then you can sprinkle in a unknown pitch that, you're not used to seeing from a guy that's probably not in the scouting report that he's thrown 36 times in a game. That's the one thing that's worrisome for me. We saw it in Tampa Bay. I told you this. That's the first thing that I noticed after game one was, let's see. Okay, we hear him talking about a swing at something you can do damage on. Do they think, after watching the last four games, do you think that opposing pitchers think that they can consistently drive the ball the other way? Well, they're telling you no because of the way they're pitching you. So it's, I understand the changeup, and it was an element of surprise. He still threw 69 other pitches that were not changeups.
No.
That is glove side, right? The ball the other way. And this is what I said when we came on the postgame show, and I said, do something different. Like, force them to be a little bit more uncomfortable. Make the target smaller. Like, you get in a groove doing the same thing over and over and over again. It's just a little worrisome that, you got some guys that should be able to make some in-game adjustments and just consistently either are not willing to or can't. I don't really know what the answer is, because consistently we have not seen them try and do either. So, yeah, look, it's league-wide now. Like, this is how you get the Jays lineup out, is righties up front. Now, Bo wasn't in a lineup. That helped him a lot. Like, that stuff he was featuring fits right into the bat path.
There's one guy in that team who might have been able to take the ball, hit the 19 hopper into right field.
Oh, no question. He's hitting line drives right all day off that stuff. So, yeah, he got lucky with not having Bo in the lineup. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Blanco. But the Jays did absolutely nothing in-game to combat that and try and figure out a way to do some damage. And that's too bad. Like, they had a guy on the mound that, I think you could predict the way Bowden Francis was looking yesterday, just because of the way the season started for the Astros and the lineup he had to work through. And, the approach early was, we knew that he had good spin on the elevated fastball. Go up and look for it.
Yeah.
No matter how high it is, looking for it, but if you're on time to try and hit it and catch it out front because you have bat speed and a bunch of talent, and you can keep it in the big part of the field,
and we
should be all right. And that's what they did.
We do have to say, we'll talk about Bowden Francis in a minute, but Yainer Diaz at home, I mean, that was not the worst pitch. That pitch was elevated.
Yeah, it's more about the approach to me, right? And then we heard Bowden Francis after the game saying, it would have been nice for me, meaning him, to make an in-game adjustment they were thinking elevated fastball. How about I throw some down, which would make my elevated fastball a little bit better? Because, let's face it, you don't throw 99.
No.
Like, you sort of have to have good sequencing and sort of set that pitch up to allow the other stuff to be that much better. It's a growing pain. Sometimes you got to learn the hard way.
He threw three splitters, his new pitch.
Yeah.
In hindsight now, should he have thrown more splitters?
Yeah, I don't think so.
You know,
what did he have? He had 18 out of 26 strike ones.
Mm-hmm.
He only had 2-3 ball counts. He had 7 strikeouts. 4 of those were off the breaking ball. The breaking ball was good. It was glove side. Every time that Kirky set up glove side, when he got in trouble, it was like the 2-run homer that Tucker hit.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good pitch. That was the one up and away that he went, a little right to the Crawford box. That's a good pitch. That's better hitting. The Diaz ball, he's trying to go away there. He left it middle up, and because that guy had a good approach and was thinking that he's throwing an elevated fastball, and it's not 100, and I can square that thing up if I'm on time with it and thinking along with the pitcher, that's what I'm trying to do. So it was a good thought process. It was – if you execute that pitch, you could probably get the lineup out. I mean, that's called pitching. And when you miss because, your stuff is not elite, this is sort of what happens. Again, look, he's hard not to root for. I mean, he's a really good dude. He'll learn from these mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
He knows now that you got to throw down some to have the elevated fastball that much better, to make the curveball that much better. And, if he wants to sprinkle in some split fingers, he can throw those too. But to be able to work both sides of the plate and get a lefty and a righty out, quadrant sometimes is key, and again, it gets back to sort of when you're facing that team that got off to a slow start and has the lineup the Astros have. It's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I said this in Blue Jays talk last night. Bowden Francis, 5 1/3, 10 hits, 7 earned runs, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk. Obviously, 7 earned runs is not good. You don't want to see that, but that didn't annoy me. That didn't upset me as much as the approach at the plate. And again, I'm going to get back to what John Schneider said. I understand no hitters are outliers. No hitters are outliers.
It is, but you can be a tougher out.
But you can be a tougher out.
You can make it harder.
And I should have said that. And I'm not saying that they quit.
Quit strong.
I expected some tougher at-bats. I expected some tougher at-bats than I got from the Blue Jays. I mean, I guess the good news is it is baseball. You've got the second game of a 3-game series tonight. You've got Jose Barrios on the mound. He was pretty good in his first outing. You've got Framber Valdez. He was not so good in his first outing. There was a little bit of news, Ben Nicholson-Smith reporting that Yenesis Cabrera, we didn't even talk about this yesterday. He's in this team to get lefties out, and he gave up some.
Tucker's good hit. I mean, he's a really good hitter.
Yeah,
make a good pitch.
Sure, but Yenesis Cabrera is on this team because he supposedly can get guys
Let's be fair.
But let me
Who you giving the advantage to? Alvarez or Tucker against Cabrera?
Okay.
I know what my answer is.
Yeah. But so Yenesis Cabrera, according to Ben Nicholson-Smith, had his 3-game suspension drop down to a two-game suspension, which is why players appeal. So that will be in effect tonight. He will start his suspension tonight. And again, 8 o'clock is the first pitch, Jays and Astros. If you are interested, that was the eighth time in franchise history that the Jays have been no-hit. They were last no-hit on July 8th, 2023. It was a team no-hitter, Matt Manning, Jason Foley, and Alex Lang of the Tigers. Justin Verlander no-hit him twice. James Paxton, Nolan Ryan, Dave Stewart, and Len Barker. And again, as I mentioned, that is the earliest no-hitter by date in MLB history. And the other aspect of the game, maybe I kind of overreacted to this, but I don't think so, because one, I don't like position players pitching anyhow. God knows you've got enough pitchers in this team. Isaiah Kiner Falefa came in relief, did that four times last year. Five games into the season, the fact that my everyday third baseman, suppose that everyday third baseman is pitching in garbage time, I don't like it. I think it's a bad look. I've said this, I think the rule's dumb. I think if you use a position player, you should lose a pitcher out of your bullpen for the next game. And if that was the case today, the Jays would be down by two, because I'm not talking about a guy who's been suspended. All that aside, though, that's just a personal thing. That's never going to change. It's just not a good look.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not a good look.
I agree 100%. I think, for me anyway, if you're walking away from that game last night and you're one of the everyday guys, you're a little embarrassed. Like, you go home, look yourself in the mirror, and go five games in, or everyday third baseman is pitching, and we got beat by a guy nobody's ever heard of. Like, again, even the Astros fans wouldn't know who that guy is. You couldn't pick him out of the lineup. I'm not taking anything away from Blanco. His stuff was off the charts.
No, we're not.
Change up and slider was on point.
Right.
But give it a little bit more of a fight. Like, that's all, I think. And I think they'll do that. Look, they're sometimes you just get got. That's exactly what happened in one of those games. And I'm sure we'll see a little bit better game today from Framber. There is no secret with Framber. Like, you're getting the sinker. It's just, can you get it above the knees and be on time on a strike?
Yeah.
Can they consistently do that? And it'll be intriguing to see if they can.
And you know, for those of you who think it's just that I'm just kind of, you know, yelling for the sake of yelling here, I keep thinking back to that Canada Day game. When was it? It was 2016, that long game, 19-inning game. Ryan Goins came in to pitch.
I think he was overthrown, though. He was trying.
The point is, he went in the 15-day DL with forearm tightness the day after.
IKF's throwing like 67 miles an hour, so he's been there before.
Anyhow,
he knows how to not do it.
As our producer, Mark Boffo, said, Jays fans wanted a two-way player. They didn't get Ohtani, but they got IKF.
Oh, wow.
That was pretty good.
Maybe five games for us to say that.
I don't. Think about it. And I know Boffo was waiting to drop that. He just never thought that he would. Five games in.
Yeah.
Five games in. Not good. Not a good look. Anyhow, we move on. Framber Valdez, Jose Berríos tonight. How do the Jays rebound from Ronald Blanco?
Look, it is really early in the season, and John's probably right. Like, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and sometimes you run into a guy that's got it working and you don't make enough adjustments and you get beat and it doesn't look great. And that's sort of what this is. And it's, you know, hopefully Bo's in the lineup. I don't think we've seen that just quite yet. I don't know if he's going to play tonight. That would be helpful, excuse me, if he's in the game. But it's with Framber, basically he's had issues the last year and some change of getting more vertical break. He's overthrowing the sinker and it looks more horizontal, which would mean that it's more looking like a two-seamer than a sinker, right? Because it's more 95 miles an hour than somewhere in that 92 and a half to 94 miles an hour. Like, I know he's coming off a bad start against the Yankees, but the velocity on the sinker was a little bit, was a little bit better, and the movement vertical break on that pitch was much better. So that's something they can build off of. And also, for whatever reason, the last year and some change, he's been wanting to throw that thing more sidearm instead of getting on top of it, driving down the mountain, and actually having it look like a sinker and not so much like a two-seamer. And that's, you know, when you whip it like that, the velocity tends to go up, the movement doesn't break or move the way you want it to break, and then you tend to either walk more people like he's been doing, or you get hit harder, which will mean you will throw more pitches, and you won't go as deep in the game as you'd like to go. So, yeah, that, you know, again, I'd say this. This is one of those games where if you don't go into this game knowing that when he's good, he's getting about 70-ish percent ground ball rate when the thing's moving and the changeup, and he'll throw a cutter occasionally, and he loves the curveball. Like, that's sort of the pitch, the curveball and the changeup. He likes to throw that with two strikes when he's looking for a strikeout. But it's heavy sinker. And if you chase consistently the ball that's below your knees, I'm not saying he's going to throw a no-hitter, but it'll be another quick game. So it's up to the lineup, right? You probably throw a bunch of righties in there, and it's above the knee and look to be on time and hit something hard. You ain't trying to direct it. You ain't thinking right center. You're not thinking length in your swing. You can't overthink this guy. You just got to get it above the knees, and you got to be on time. And if they can consistently do that, just simplify. It seems to be simple, right? They're trying to sort of beat that into everybody's mind of, don't overthink this thing. That's why they're going up there saying, swing at something you can do damage on. That's it. There's no other things, right? It's not mechanical, because now these guys are old enough when it comes to their mechanics. They should have found what they do well mechanically that they don't have to think about it anymore. Mm-hmm. They ain't Kevin Barker, right? So it's just walk up there now and sort of think about what the guy's trying to do against you and how you can combat that. And for me, it's real simple. Look above the knee and be on time. And if they can do that, and hopefully the first four guys in the order, and hopefully Bo's the first four guys in the order, and they can string together a hit or two and somebody can run into one, and Brios can pitch well. Brios is sort of the same way, right? It's fastball command. It'll always be that way, and don't overthrow the slurve. If he doesn't overthrow the slurve and he's good arm side, that's backdoor two-seamer to the righty. That's front hip two-seamer to the lefty, and he can up and down with the four-seamer, right? The slurve's down, the fastball's down, and he can trick you sometimes with the elevated four-seamer, and he'll like the changeup too against the lefties in the middle of the order. So he's got to do things, but it's mainly glove side, command with the fastball, and don't overthrow the slurve.
Let me ask you this. We know that the knock against Jose Berríos and the reason that he was developed the cutter in spring training was to handle lefties.
Yeah.
And Houston's got some good lefty hitters. Mm-hmm. His last five starts against the Astros, Berríos, 4-1, 0.98 whip, 23 strikeouts, 6 walks, got a 2.48 ERA, 32 and two-thirds innings. I'm looking at the Astros' numbers against him. Yordan Alvarez, again, the small sample size. Yordan Alvarez, 1-for-10. That happens to be a home run.
Yep.
Kyle Tucker, he's also hit a home run against him. But it seems as if Jose Berríos, for whatever reason, has success against this lineup. Any explanation?
Yeah,
for that?
I think he's not afraid to crowd the left. He said that's one thing, right? And, you know, if you miss in there, don't miss out over the middle of the plate. So he's changed some things mechanically, which has helped him repeat the same release point over and over and over again. That's why it doesn't do the windup anymore. Mm-hmm. It's real simple, right? I pick it up and I land in the same spot, which will allow me to have the good separation out of my glove to get it out, to whip it and have the same release point, right? To where I can stay in the same lane and have the ball end up where I want it to end up. So I think that's one of the things. And I think the slurve down is a big pitch. Don't overthrow it. When he's overthrowing it and it's in that 83, 84 range instead of in the 82s, the 82 tends to just be enough of a difference between the fastball, the sinker, that you sort of get the either the weaker contact or the swing and miss if you keep it in the right location. So he can locate it better when it's at the right mile per hour, when he's not overthrowing it, and he can get what he's trying to get from it, which is a big deal. And the changeup with some run to it is a good pitch too. I think he feels comfortable in that because he's refined mechanics and, you know, he's worked really hard with his lower half, which has enabled him to maintain velocity on everything. If I want to throw my slurve 82 because I have a strong lower half, I can do that. right? If I want to consistently be at 94, 95 with my fastball and my two-seamer, I can do that because I have a strong lower half. So, you know, it's an accumulation of a bunch of things, but I just think it is, if Kirky wants to throw the ball into a lefty, front hip it, he can actually do that because he's mechanically sound, he's in his right lane, he's strong with his lower half, and he's confident, he's not overthinking it. So you feel confident when he takes the mound now because of the adjustments he's made, which enables him to basically throw it where he wants to go.
What would you think would be a good mix for him with the cutter?
Yeah, I don't really like the cutter against this team.
Okay.
I mean,
because when you miss it, it's a BP fastball.
Yeah,
right?
Don't get cute.
Okay.
I mean, I think the scoreboard will tell him when to throw it.
All right.
And you got a lead, throw it. If you want to throw it, work on it, go for it.
You made this point on Blue Jays Talk last night, which I thought was terrific. By getting an early lead, the Astros allowed Ronald Blanco to get frisky with the changeup.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Because are you looking up the scoreboard? I got a 5-0 lead.
Oh, yeah.
If I give up a home.
Yeah, so what?
Yeah.
I can keep throwing it. Breeze
that
is
was
no
an interesting
right?
point. You
yeah,
made.
Absolutely. So, you know, to take the sting out of a bat against a tough righty like Diaz, if you wanted to throw him the cutter, you know, his second at bat to give him a different look for with maybe a guy on first, right, when he's one of those guys who's trying to do damage and stay in the big part of the field who does have power line to line that we've already seen, maybe you could throw it against him. But you don't want to get cute. You don't want to abuse that thing. Because, again, if you miss – sometimes it looked to me like in spring training he was aiming that thing. He wanted to make sure he missed the right way with it, which is never the way you want to pitch. That's more throwing it than pitching with it. And against the Astros, especially the way they looked last night. Remember, Alvarez didn't even get a hit last night.
Yeah, and Bregman struck out, what, three times?
Yeah. So it's, you know, you got to be good with what you're trying to do in the quadrants that you want to do it in. And sometimes I think overthinking it by just trying to throw a pitch because you've been working on it's not always the best thing.
I get the sense that Yainer Diaz is going to be a pain in the ass in the American League for a long time, isn't he?
He can hit. Like, you know, he's an offensive player first, I think, which is refreshing. I'll be honest with you. Like, this is sort of, you know, the catchers now that can hit in the middle of the order, it's a big deal. Like, we sort of trying to force Kirky into this, aren't we?
Yeah.
A little? Like, we're hoping and praying that Kirky can turn the corner and be sort of, I don't want to say a run producer, but hold his own in those at-bats. Like,
somebody who can hit in the middle of the order.
There you go. Maybe backspin a double to right center against an elite pitcher that we really haven't consistently seen. So, yeah, he is. Like, they're oozing out of the organization for the Astros for some reason. It's not fair.
Well, it's
it's really not.
You know, and I was thinking about this last night watching the game and thinking our conversation with Jeff Blum about how, look, you've got Bregman as a free agent at the end of the year. You've got Kyle Tucker, who's a free agent the same year Vladdy and Bo is a free agent.
Yeah.
And you know, they've signed Jose Altuve to an extension, so he's likely going to finish his career with Houston. And we asked Jeff Blum, the Astros analyst, does Houston have a chance of signing both of these guys? Do they have a chance of just signing one of them? And watching Diaz last night just kind of reinforced the importance of having that next group, right? And, I mean, I hate to say it, you know, I look at the Blue Jays and I go, okay, where's their, you know, Yainer Diaz? And I know it's not fair. It's not fair necessarily, but you watch a team like the Astros that just seem to find these guys.
Yeah, whenever you watch the Jays lineup and you watch the lack of balance and you watch the lack of just the really good left-handed hitter, I just don't know how they don't back the Brinks truck up to Tucker and say what he wants to stay here. I mean, end your career here.
I think you have to. I think what you have to do.
30-30 don't grow on trees, does it?
I think what you have to do is you have to go all out to sign that guy.
You would think so.
And, you know, maybe you get a chance to, well, Bregman's Boris client. He's not giving you a hometown discount. You may just have to punt on Alex Bregman if you're the Astros.
Maybe you make a run at it, but it ain't a series of run as it would be against Tucker. I just think the quality left-handed hitter, now he had a bad, last year in the playoffs. Like, sometimes he's an easier guy to pitch to because he's a trier. Like, he wants to really help carry his team. And, you know, the other lefty in that lineup is elite, and the things he does against elite pitching, you know, at the biggest time of the year is hard to follow. And sometimes I think he tries a little bit too hard. But, man, you can't argue the talent. You saw yesterday, he's line-to-line power. I mean, and he's perfect for that park, right? He can backspin the ball to left field and get the cheap homer and sort of give that pitcher some breathing room to want to throw the changeup whenever he wants to throw it. And I just think as hard as we've seen the Jays look for the good left-handed hitter and what they were willing to pay for the one that they were wanting to pay, I don't know how, if you're the Astros, how you just don't say, what here's a blank check. I mean, fill in the blank. I mean, be reasonable with it, but you're pretty good.
Ryan Dempster is host of Intentional Talk on the MLB Network. He's, of course, a former MLB pitcher, World Series champion. He's one of our favorites. He'll join us after the break. Jim Bowden as well. And Hazel May joins us from Houston. All that ahead. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And if you're watching us on TV, it's because we're on Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, I really wish we could play the stuff that gets said.
Not all of it.
During breaks and in the lead in to the show. See, I miss that because now where we are, the people who actually make the show work are two floors above us.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't lose that human contact of being able to look at Boffo or Jen or Derek, kind of, you know, look at their face and get the, you know, or the, oh, that was a good point. Kind of miss that. So instead,
did
we
they
just
ever
get,
do that? Like, yeah, wow, that's a good point. They never did
so
that.
So instead, we just get Derek speaking in our ear.
Yeah.
Making jokes about being old.
Nice to us, too.
8-10 is the first pitch tonight. The Jays will attempt a rebound from being no hit by Ronel Blanco. A Blanco for Blanco.
I can't wait to watch IKF pitch again.
Ryan Dempster is host of Intentional Talk on MLB Network. He's a former MLB pitcher and World Series champion. He joins us in Blair and Barker. Mr. Dempster, always a treat to have you with us. Watching Ronel Blanco last night, and, you know, the game was April 1st, and it's the earliest a team is throwing a no-hitter, kind of made me wonder, why don't we see more no-hitters early in the season? Because I keep being told that pitchers are ahead of hitters. Why don't we see more no-hitters at this point in time?
Pitch counts.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, just guys just aren't afforded. You know, like 100 pitches during, you know, the middle of July seems like a daunting task.
Right.
You know, but like, you know, when I was coming up, you were kind of on that. That was your limit. Like, you know, speaking of yesterday, like Imanaga had a no-hitter with two outs in the sixth. I'm like, and he gave up a hit. And I'm like, good. Like, in a sense, because I'm like, I don't even want counsel to have to worry about that decision because he was at 80-something pitches, you know, and if you get to that territory. So, yeah, it's just hard to be efficient enough early on in the season, even though guys, you know, say pitchers are ahead. I don't know. Some of the games have improved that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I just think it's one of those things where everything, the stars have to align for it.
Dan, but is there any worry for you know, long-term when it comes to Blanco throwing 102 pitches and throwing a lot of change-ups? I think he threw 36 change-ups. The other were forcing a slider. Is there any worry, you know, going forward if you're him, you know, what you do between starts to maybe keep yourself sharp? That is a lot of pitches. I was just thinking about that when you were saying it, and he hadn't thrown that many change-ups in one game. Does it matter? I mean, he looked like he was free and easy to me.
He didn't have a lot of pressure on him either.
It didn't look that way. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be nice here. I'm trying to throw this, you know, how is he going to work on it and make it better to continue to be as good as he was in his first start, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, more than the pitches, like, and spring training has changed too, Bark. Like, you know, I remember most of my spring trainings, especially, you know, as I got established in the big leagues, but I would throw six or seven innings and get up to 100 pitches, and that just doesn't really happen as much anymore. His previous time out, his last spring training start, he had 10 punchouts or something like that. Mm-hmm. He kind of dealt, so maybe he had a little bit of experience. The biggest issue, I think, early on in the season with pitchers is the getting up, getting down, more than the pitches. Is because every time you go out there and throw an inning and then you sit down, the further on the game goes, the more your shoulder starts to tighten up a little bit. Your back maybe tightens up a little bit. So then you go out there, you get warm, you go through it. I'm sure there's going to be a plan in place. But at the same time, there's not a formula, right? I've talked about this with you guys before. I've talked about it with a lot of people. We're all human beings. As hard as they're trying to make everybody robots, everybody, and you see that guy? Look at his biceps. Good Lord. That guy's built, man. So maybe physically he can handle all this. And there'll be times that they maybe say, okay, we got an extra day. We're gonna give you that extra day. And especially early on season with off days, you have the ability to do that. But he looked in complete and total control. You know, not a lot of breaking balls. Like you said, he's got a nasty changeup. And he fastball changeup most of the time and not a lot of high-stress innings. So maybe he'll be just fine.
Deb, how do you think the clubhouse for the Blue Jays are thinking last night? I don't want to say today because most of them guys, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. I don't think a bunch of them care. You know, they're going to wake up today. They're going to eat what they eat. They're going to go do their routine that they normally do. But last night, you know, if I were on that team, I'd be embarrassed a little bit. Like a guy nobody's ever heard of, you know, the adjustments you made in-game weren't the greatest. You got a veteran lineup who has been yelling and screaming about changes that you've made, you know, mentally of what you're trying to do at the plate. How do you think they felt last night in the clubhouse?
Yeah, I mean, getting no hit is, you know, I think I was lucky enough to not have to deal with that on the other side of it. But it is, right? It's a little frustrating, you know, like it's Vladdy strikes out three times in the game and you have these different elements where it's like, you know, it's a little bit frustrating for guys because you don't get it done. And then you get no hitting feels, I'm sure for an offense, it feels a little bit embarrassing. Especially against a guy who's not this premier ace in the league where you can understand it. But at the end of the day, a loss is a loss. And then the easiest way to solve that is just come out of the gates and put up a big crooked number at some point, and people forget about that real quick. But in that moment last night, not fun. No matter if it's the, you know, sitting there the fifth game of the year or the 105th game of the year, it doesn't matter. Being no hit sucks.
Brian, you had a one hitter against the Mets. I think you carried a no hitter into the sixth. It was in 2000.
I would have had a no hitter. Cliff got a better beat on that ball. You know, the one that was about 185 off the bat from Piazza. If he would have been standing up against the fence, he would have caught it. You know,
it's always good to blame Cliff. It never fails. I know in that game, I think you had four walks. You struck out eight. Put us inside the head of a pitcher who is throwing a no-hitter. I covered Dennis Martinez's perfect game, and I remember Ron Hassey was his catcher, and Ron Hassey had caught Len Barker's perfect game, and Ron Hassey went up to him in the fifth inning and said, you know what, you're probably going to throw a no-hitter today. It was against the Dodgers, and you know, he liked it. Dennis said afterwards it was kind of nice coming in the dugout and having Hassey, you know, sit next to me and go, hey, six more outs, man, and you got a perfect game. Keep it going. What goes through a pitcher's head when you're in that situation?
Yeah, I think, you know, early on, you're getting outs and you're just making pitches. And that second time through the lineup, that's when you tend to start to realize you haven't given up a hit yet. You know, I'd walked, a guy or two early on in the first four innings. So then I knew you pitch out of the stretch, it's like, okay, cool. I've worked through a little bit of traffic, but you know, you haven't given up a hit.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that sit there and say, oh, I didn't even realize I had no hitter. You're lying. Then you're not focused, man. Like, I get it. We're going pitch to pitch, but you don't know you haven't given up a hit yet. Like, it's in there. And then that's where you have to have that ability to just take deep breaths and not think about that, because that's result orientated. All you're trying to do is execute pitches. And, you know, like a one hit shutout against the Mets, it was incredible. Like, I gave up that double, but also great plays behind me. Luis Castillo made a great sliding play in the hole. Preston Wilson made a diving catch in center field. You know, there was a lot of help behind me too. And just like we saw last night, that play by Abreu and things like that throughout the game that maybe you don't remember being the reason why you have a no hitter. So, and then it gets to that moment, you really, you know, have to control those emotions. And a game like last night, like for example, you fall behind Springer and then you don't want to give in. You can walk guys because, and not that you're out there trying to walk anybody, but like you're protecting a no hitter. AJ Burnett did that in San Diego. We walked eight guys in a no hitter. And right. I think we had somebody up from the fourth inning on. It was just like, but he didn't give up any hits. So, you know, he got it done. And you know, it's a dream come true for these guys who do it. I was close, never got the chance to do it, but it is what you dream about in the backyard. And when you're going through, you're trying everything you can to not give that hit up.
Damn, when you're on these teams and, you know, like the Tigers are 4-0, like the Pirates who are 5-0, like the Yankees who are 5-0, you know, I think the Yankees we could believe could be a really good team. The Tigers, there's some unknowns there. The Pirates, we were thinking, you know, could finish last in that division. It's not a great team. They might be a little bit more fun to watch this year. If you're in the clubhouse of one of these teams, when do you start believing? One way or the other, what part of the season? Is it a month? Is it number of games? When do you start believing in your team one way or the other?
Yeah, I think when you can have an April and you finish April and you're near the top of your division, that's when, you know, listen, everybody leaves spring training believing this is our year and that we're going to get this done. And, you know, I think certain teams is a little bit more important. Like the Yankees, to me, are built a little bit more sustainable. But at the same time, you're in a really tough division. So getting off to a good start, I don't think they could have dreamed it up any better going on the road and winning 5-0 and Juan Soto getting off to the start he has. But you also, you know, you have a lot of guys who've been around a while. When you're the Pirates, you know, people, I heard this was a good comment, Pirates and Tigers. Somebody said, oh, they're playing the Marlins and, you know, and the White Sox. Cool. It'd be really easy to lose to those teams too, right?
Yeah.
Like, because you let your guard down, but they're taking care of business. And, you know, for the Pirates to go on the road like that and do what they did, they're, to me, a little bit of an I have them in my playoff bracket making a wild card spot. I just think that they were really good last year and then lost O'Neill Cruz to injury, and I think he's a dynamic player. But for the Tigers, you know, getting off to a good start, I think that's probably out of those three teams the most important one because you have a bunch of young guys, some young starting pitchers. Now you get that confidence, you start beating people, and then you start to figure out what it takes to win ball games. You've learned over the last few years what it takes to lose ball games, and you don't know how to win yet. So when you start to win those games, you start to go, okay, that's what we need to do. We got to be a little bit sharper here. We got to be making sure we're turning the double play. We don't need to give four outs in an inning. Let's get all three when we can, whatever it is. And so a team like that, to me, I think winning those games is imperative, and they've done a good job of getting off to a good start.
You know, we saw a lot of pitchers in spring training this year working in new pitches, right? Even Spencer Strider was working on a curve. Tonight we'll see Jose Berríos. He was been working on a cutter. Last night we saw Ronel Blanco, who as a reliever last year threw something like 86 changeups all year, 9%. Last night he threw 36 changeups. What does it take for a pitcher, Ryan, to go from I'm working on it in the bullpen and in spring training to I'm throwing it now. Try to hit it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, success with it from a visual standpoint. Do I like it? And then, you know, translating into games and big league games, not spring training games. And I think the easiest way to do that is, you know, the bullpen's great, but it's hard to duplicate all the things that are going on when you're facing a guy, a hitter in the box, the adrenaline of competition. You know, especially now in spring training games, you got 10 to 12,000 people in the stands. So a little bit of that. And then how does it look? And I think, you know, taking opportunities, sometimes lately, I don't know what it is. We get so caught up in the results of spring training. And I've said this, I might have said it to you guys before. Look, I got thousands of baseball cards in my office. I can't find a spring training stat on the back, no matter how hard I look. And so why not, if I'm working on a new pitch, why not go out there and be like, I'm throwing 95% cutters today. I'm going to throw 90% breaking balls, because if that's something that I'm trying to evolve, I don't got time in the regular season. We see it year in, year out. What comes down to the last week of September, got to win these games. Well, so do we got to win the ones in April. I got time to be working on that pitch in games in April. So, you know, I think working on those, throwing those a lot. And if you have success like Blanco did, throw it again. Why not throw it again? Let's go until you hit it. You know, that's what happened with my split. Fergie Jenkins showed me how to throw my split on the backfield and throw a bullpen. in spring training in 2005, and I threw it. And then next thing you know, it was this wipeout pitch for me. I threw it again and again. And Larry Rothschild said, every time you face a lefty, you get two strikes, throw that pitch because they're not hitting it. And it was a game changer for me. So success, right? Seeing it, and then it translates into the game, and then just go with it. Believe it. If you're seeing the results from your eyes and how the ball moves, and then the hitter is showing you those results, don't stop throwing it. Keep going.
Hey, Berríos is trying to throw a cutter. I would think a guy that's married to a sinker might be hard to develop a cutter. Tell me if I'm wrong. That's sort of two sides of the plate. You know, you're trying to get two different results from two different pitches. And when you're so like locked into, you know, a front hip two seamer to a lefty, or you're trying to get really bearing down and keep that sinker down either into a righty, away to a lefty, and then you're trying to throw a cutter. Is that tough to do, or is it not? Am I overthinking that?
No, you're not overthinking it. I think it's a real thing. And I, you know, if as long as a new pitch or another pitch doesn't take away from your current repertoire and the way the ball moves, go for it. But if you're starting to notice that is taking away from those pitches, that, like, I did that a little bit towards the end of my career. I started throwing a cutter, and it started to take away from my slider a bit because I was having trouble shaping my slider, and the cutter were at times too close. So I kind of scrapped my cutter and went back to the slider, and it helped a lot. And so, yeah, just got to be careful not to lose something. If you think you're going to gain something with that cutter, as long as you're not giving up on the other end, then go for it. But if you start giving up, then you might be like, well, what's the risk reward here? There's more risk than there is reward.
Dip, is there a surprise to begin the season that you've seen, player, team, maybe an approach that you've seen that you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. We're not used to seeing that. Is there something that stands out to you to start the season here?
For me, I think, you know, a couple things. One, the Milwaukee Brewers to me have been a surprise, and you know, and on the other side of it, the Mets look not very good.
No,
but the Brewers lose their manager, who's been, you know, manager of the year and highly sought after across the market. They lose their Cy Young Award winner, Corbin Burns. They lose their closer, and they didn't look like they missed a beat. And so, you know, here was a team I thought might take a step backwards, but they just seem to keep finding guys who can go out there and make pitches. They've got a good system in place. So to me, that was, you know, a really big surprise. And the Texas Rangers, man, they just look like they haven't skipped a beat since the World Series. And you know what? They lost Young yesterday to the broken wrist, and they're going to slot in. Foskey's going to play third base or whoever else, and they're just going to keep hammering the baseball. These guys are dangerous, and they're feeling it.
Yep. Yeah, I've been sort of on the Rangers all spring with Kevin, just because I understand there's some pitching injuries there and they'll get those guys back. But I mean, Ryan, that lineup is just, I mean, it's almost vicious. When they get a guy on the ropes, it's like just a feeding frenzy.
You know who one of my favorite players, and I watched, you know, up and close personal throughout the Corey Seager to me.
Yeah.
And Bart,
yes,
you can kind of talk about this a little bit as a hitter, but like as a pitcher, I don't know if there's a guy in the league that is more frustrating to face because he's not working a count. He goes up there and says, I got three swings. And if you throw, he is the epitome of it is a strike till it is a ball. And he is swinging and there's nothing you can do about it. And he's dangerous as can be. And he's a great teammate. He's a great leader. And man, what a great signing for them to sign him.
Yeah, he can hit lefties too. There's no setting him up, which is something that veteran pitchers are trying to do. But I just want to see Mike Trout on a good team. The balls are going.
That home run he hit last night.
Trade him to a good team. Please, I want to see him. Maybe a good team could keep him healthy too. I don't know. I mean, maybe that too. I just want to see him, how he would look on a really good team. Am I asking too much?
And I understand where he's coming from. Like, I get it. You know, like, I understand Mike and him signing there and saying, I want to be there for the good times and the bad, and I'll get through the bad because I'm not just going to – but, like, at some point, I'm sure it's going to get to that point for Mike where he's going to be like, okay, I mean, these bad times are just continuing. If we're not going to be a better team, then I want to try and win because baseball deserves Mike Trout on the biggest stage, and Mike Trout deserves to be playing postseason.
Absolutely.
Baseball.
Yeah. Well said. Really well said, yeah. And I think we're both with you on that. Hey, Ryan, really good of you to do this as always. Thank you so much.
You're
for
the
this.
Best, buddy. Thanks.
You got it. Always love being with you guys, man.
Take care.
Have a good rest of the week.
Yeah, you too.
All
thank
right.
you.
Too, man. Ryan Dempster, host of Intentional Talk and MLB Network. 2000, he had a one-hitter against the New York Mets in May. And I was laughing when he mentioned A.J. Burnett's no-hitter because that is famous.
Yeah, we're
that is famous.
It is. Yeah, that's A.J. Like
I know.
I laughed at that. It is.
That's him.
It is. Like has basically no idea what to do. No. Like they're just throwing it because he's got good stuff. Then yeah. Hopefully nobody hits
now,
him.
Now he may it's be funny. A guy I would believe may not know that he's throwing a no-hitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've been around that to know you're exactly right.
He doesn't know what day it is.
You're exactly right. Yes. I wonder if there's a computer or a khaki that's sitting around for the Blue Jays today going, is there a game plan after a no-hitter? Somebody throws a no-hitter against you. Is there some kind of game plan for Berríos? Is there a better game plan or some theory or some kind of equation that we could give a lineup that will have better at-bats after a no-hitter that's thrown against and the way your pitcher looked against the guy that was throwing the no-hitter?
So
I wonder if there is.
It's just so pitching specific.
It is, really.
Right?
Absolutely.
And that's the whole thing. My friend John Lowe, who used to cover the Tigers for years, always made a point of this. Whenever you try to explain to a non-baseball person or a non-baseball fan what makes the game different, it's like cricket. They're the only two games where the defense has possession of the ball. And and it sounds silly, but you know what? If Framber Valdez comes out tonight and deals, okay, then. But if Framber Valdez comes out and is all over the place, then I think last night's no-hitter was forgotten about the third batter in. The Jays have a 1-0 lead after the first inning. Last night might as well not have happened.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, it's the era of overthinking it, though. It truly is way overthinking.
Well, it's the old story. You probably heard this. I mean, I can remember covering baseball when knuckleball starters were there. Guys used to say, oh, my God, if you face a knuckleballer and he eats you up, that's like a week-long slump.
It is.
And there used to be this thing, and I didn't see anybody actually go back and study it, but it was kind of one of the old stories. Oh, you know, man.
Manager would sit their best hitter against the knuckleball guy.
Oh, absolutely.
He didn't want to screw up the swing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just I can just picture it right now. Like that, you know, that there's 15 of them. Well, how do you do it? How are we supposed to do it today? Like, you know, we had a no-hitter thrown against. I don't know.
That's
maybe I'm overthinking it, but it's funny.
That's why they have an offensive coordinator this year.
I'm sure it will help if Bo Bichette's in the lineup today. I'm sure that will help.
That will make a difference. And
won't hurt.
I was thinking about that last night, that this is a game that is just crying out for Bo Bichette to right field like that.
Yeah. Lead by example.
Yeah. Anyhow, we'll see what happens tonight. A reminder, first pitch is 8:10 tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. Kevin and myself will be doing Blue Jays talk immediately following the game. Jim Bowden, MLB analyst and insider with CBS Sports, joins us in the next hour. Hazel May as well. We'll talk to Hazel about, get her thoughts on how Bowden Francis handled the loss last night. Get an update on Bo Bichette. And talk to Hazel about Larry Lucchino, longtime baseball executive who passed away today. And, I mean, gosh, Larry, Orioles, Red Sox, he was an important part of those two franchises. And if you spend any time around baseball as a reporter, and Hazel's case was in Boston when he was there, everybody has a story about Larry Lucchino doing something that was just a little out of his way to make things easier for people. And he didn't have to, because he was a big wheel in baseball. He was one of Bud Selig's troubleshooters. I mean, he had a big voice in how baseball was run. But if you're a reporter, you showed up late, you missed the scheduled interview in the postseason, as I did one time.
Experience.
Larry, man, can you fill up my notebook? Let's go to the office, have a coffee. Exactly. Jim Bowden joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 8 o'clock will be the first pitch tonight. Or I guess 8:10.
Well, that's not 8 o'clock. You have to read it right.
Yeah, but I want people to tune in early anyhow. Jays and Astros, the second of a three-game series. The Jays are 2-3 in the season. They are right on track to be 5-5 when they come back to the Rogers Center for their season opener, home opener on Monday. Right on track.
Come on.
As the wise among us have been suggesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd take five. Okay, after what you saw last night, no hit by Ronel Blanco. Blanc by Blanco. 5-5 looking.
They got to clean some things up.
5-5 looking pretty good right now. Because that was, I don't know about you, but when I was looking at the pitching matchups, that was one that I had down as a W. I had a W down there.
That's what you get. That's what you get.
I had a W down there.
You didn't really think that the Astros are going to lose five in a row to start the season, did you?
No, but I had that down as a W. Yeah, I mean, did I think that Ronel Blanco was capable of losing his first start of the season? Yeah. No, but did I think that he was capable of losing his first start? Yeah.
If I'd have told you Francis was going to give it up and look like he's, you know, occasionally never pitched before, you would have.
That's a little harsh. That's a little harsh.
You agree? That is a little harsh.
That's a little harsh.
That's a little harsh.
Again, I didn't see anything last night that changed my mind about Bowden Francis. He's a fifth starter in this
team.
Oh,
I didn't either. No, he's gonna be good. I mean, he may not be great, but he'll be good.
He did give up a home run to a dude and hadn't hit a home run in about a year. He's still a pretty good player, Jeremy Peña. What was it? Dan mentioned it was like 263 days since he hit a home. Now, I understand there's an offseason there. It's a long time since he hit a home run.
Yeah.
Did you see his Jeremy Peña's reaction crossing home plate?
Yeah.
Was there you know where I'm going with this. Do you remember a home run that broke a specific drought for you?
Not really. Okay. I had a bunch of them in the minor leagues. I didn't really
There was no, like, long over.
Not even
the time that you sold your car to get rid of it.
I'm sure there was some 0 for 30s in there, 0 for 40s. You know, that's a good solid half a month. That's 10, 12 games.
I can't, you know what?
10, 12 games.
I can't imagine. Especially for
think of mood I was in, boy, when I was in.
Well, I mean, I know the mood you're in
now.
But I can't imagine for somebody
talking about a good teammate.
I was going to say, I can't imagine for somebody was a power hitter to go that long without hitting
a
home
run. It's hard.
It's just
hands bleeding in the cage, just trying to figure it out, boy. It's got to be something. I had a long swing. You know, I had to be shorter and quicker.
And it's not like
as long as I could get to my finish, I was good. If I couldn't get there.
And it's not like Louisville had 25 khakis to go to help you.
You know what? When I was playing, I wish I had more khakis. Somebody could walk up to me and go, hey, stop going so far back. Go forward a little bit more, a little sooner. Maybe I'd have stayed in the big leagues longer. I didn't have anybody tell me that, and I had to figure it out on my own. By the time I figured it out, Jeff, I was too old that mattered anymore. That's basically my career. It took me a little bit too long to figure it out, and I had to figure it out on my own. I didn't have help around me.
Framber Valdez against Jose Berríos tonight, the second of a three-game series. The Jays will have Thursday off, and then they go to the Bronx for a weekend series against the undefeated Yankees.
Best team in American League.
You were telling me, you just said Houston's still the best team in the American League.
I was joking, but I said this. I said if Gerrit Cole was healthy, I was picking them to win the American League East because, you know, sometimes you back a bunch of old guys in a corner, they come out of swinging because they're smart. They know when to swing and how much to swing.
It didn't happen
that way, and you take youth over that with the Orioles. But the Yankees got a good team, and Soto gives him something.
I got Houston going to the
World
Series.
It's like Josh Donaldson when he came to the Blue Jays. He gave them something. Little bit of that, you know, we got a little attitude. There's something to that in the American League. It's not everything. I mean, he's a really good hitter. He's left-handed, but that helps too. But he gives them a little something else too. I think just attitude and showing up, and it's the big bad Yankees again, which I think they've been missing that for a while.
Yeah, I think, the kind of the deterioration, if you want to call it that, in Giancarlo Stanton or Stanton, Judge, you know, the size of those two dudes used to be so intimidating. And now I'm with you. I think Soto, I mean, I'd l- I hate to say, I'd love to see Soto sign with the Yankees for a long period of time because, one, I think the Yankees are better. Baseball's better when the Yankees are good, and two, I just think he would it'd be a great show.
Maybe he's born to be a Yankee.
He could be. Jim Bowden is MLB analyst and insider with CBS Sports and MLB Network, former Major League General Manager, joining us on Blair and Barker. Jim, thanks for joining us today. We trust that you're keeping well. We had Ryan Dempster on a couple of minutes ago, and last night we saw Ronel Blanco throw a no-hitter at the Blue Jays. 36 change-ups. It was a new pitch that he was working on in spring training, trotted it out. Obviously, it was effective. Tonight, Jose Berríos goes for the Blue Jays. He's worked on a cutter in spring training. No idea whether or not we'll see this. You know, we know Spencer. I mean, you've written about the Spencer Strider. There are a ton of guys, good pitchers, that were working on new pitches in spring training. As an executive, what was your reaction when a manager, a pitching coach, or even a pitcher would come to you and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking of working on this in spring training? Like, would you kind of go, were you always, hey, that's great, go at it? Or were there times where you'd go, maybe not. Can we talk this through?
Well, I think for the most part, you always have to be reinventing yourself as a pitcher. You always have to be making adjustments. Now, look, if you're dominant and you're Randy Johnson in his prime or Greg Maddux in his prime, you don't have to change anything or do anything. When you're a journeyman like Blanco and you're trying to make a team, yeah, you've got to be creative because what you've done hasn't worked. On the other side, you know, if you're Spencer Strider, we saw, for example, how dominant he was last year. I mean, no one struck out as many batters as he did. But, you know, we also saw him at times struggle against some left-handed hitters. Mm. And everybody looked at him and said, yeah, to win the Cy Young, maybe we need to add a different breaking ball. Maybe that would help for the left-handed hitters and backdoor curveball. I think you have to always invent yourself. You know, what Craig Breslow and Andrew Bailey are doing in Boston right now, I mean, it's pretty clear what their strategy is, right? We're going to just throw all breaking balls and secondary pitches. And they're off to a decent start. I mean, you know, we'll see how it works as they get through the league a couple of times. But, yeah, they're reinventing themselves. You know, a lot of the analytic people are looking and saying, well, you know, the industry hit 260 against fastballs. They hit 240 against breaking balls. Why aren't we throwing more breaking balls? Why are we throwing fastballs if they're the ones that are getting hit? So, you know, we're in a day and age where everyone is overanalyzing everything. And individuals, you know, are trying to be the best they can be. And you don't want to be predictable either, because everybody knows in this day and age what you're throwing, what you normally throw, how you normally sequence. And everyone's trying to find an edge and do something different. And you saw what Sonny Gray did in Cincinnati and Minnesota.
Yep.
Ended up getting that contract with St. Louis, creating that sweeper, right? Yep. So, yeah, I think it's a thing that needs to be done.
Jim, what do you make of the Jays lineup?
It's weak, right?
Yeah.
I mean, pitching and defense is good enough to win the division. It's good enough to do that. But there's not enough offense. And in this day and age, you got to have offense. And I know people will argue, well, look at Tampa. How many times, you know, pitching and defense, they were sitting there in 190 games. Yeah, but they also did score runs. They also moved the chains pretty good. They've always had an underrated offense. They haven't done it with just pitching and defense. They've actually done it with pitching, defense, and hitting. Once they went away from the homers and went back to moving the chains, they've been pretty good. And that's what I worry about the Blue Jays. You know, I mean, you're putting a lot of pressure on the stars to carry you. And the days that they don't hit, the days that Guerrero and Bichette are silent, you're going to have a tough time scoring runs. So I don't like the offense. I'm surprised they didn't do more to help it. Pitching and defense, why? Sure. You'll be able to be in games. You're not going to embarrass yourself. You're going to stay in a lot of games. But in this league, you have to score runs. And, you know, you saw when the Yankees went out and got Juan Soto, right? They've changed their offense because they had to. They realized last year, we can't just win on the home run. We need to improve the team on base percentage. We got to find a way to do that. We'll go get the best in the business. In Soto, he'll set the example, and the rest of the lineup will follow. And what do they have, 22 walks or something in the first five games? I mean, it's been ridiculous.
Yep. Jim, as someone who's had to manage a payroll, if I had told you in, let's say, the second year that Vladdy and Bo were with the Blue Jays, if I had told you that 4 years down the road, the Jays would be one of the top, I don't know, five or six teams in payroll, Obviously, you know, a luxury tax team, club record payroll, all that good stuff. And one, they didn't have Bo or Vladdy signed through at least some of their free agent periods. And two, they were running out a lineup that is, you, I think you ranked them 18th best in baseball going into the year. You might have been a little charitable there. Would that have surprised you if I told you that they were running a payroll of that size and this is what they have?
Honestly, yes. The answer to that, yes. I mean, look, I've always believed you take care of your star players first, and they've got to be taken care of before you can build around them. You know, when I was in Cincinnati, Barry Larkin was the guy.
Yep.
So I built everything around Barry, and I made sure I took care of Barry first every single time. 5-year deal, took care of him. Back then, 5 years would probably equal to 10 today. But I took care of him right away because you have to be able to do that, and the team has to be able to look at your star players and understand they're taken care of. So, you know, for me, I'm a little bit surprised they didn't take care of Bo Bichette earlier. And you got to do it early. You can't do it late, and then it gets too expensive, and then they get close to free agency, and they go out there. Guerrero is kind of an interesting one because he's not as easy because of his body type and because he really hasn't been the guy that we saw 3 years ago. We keep hoping that it comes back. So he's a little bit trickier. I'm surprised they haven't made a little more effort on the offensive side of the ball. They've done a good job, I think, with the pitching. I do, and I think they've done a good job with the defense. But, and look, you don't have to have superstars to hit. Tampa Bay doesn't. You don't have to go get the Juan Soto, but you've got to be able to move the line. You can't have a below-average hitter in left, a below-average hitter in center, a below-average hitter at third, a below-average hitter at second, a below-average hitter. You can't do that and win. Not in this league anymore.
Jimmy may have just answered my question, but me and Jeff do the postgame show on the radio after the games. And whenever I watch the Jays lineup have trouble making in-game adjustments, not taking anything away from Blanco, but it was basically the slider away. You know, he can throw some called strikes, but it was to the righty, slider away. I'm going to quadrant the fastball, but it's going to be mainly glove slide. That's away to righties. And then I'm going to sprinkle in a changeup because I got good feel of that. And it's just the inability to make an in-game adjustment, right? Let it travel, backspin a line drive to right center. If you're in the front office and you're watching the Jays lineup, what's that tell you? That they're not able consistently to make an in-game adjustment?
It's in game adjustment. The biggest part is chasing out of the strike zone. Then don't chase that changeup out of the strike zone. Don't chase that slider out of the strike zone. And I know his ball was dropping late, and they hadn't seen him, and they weren't aware what was going to happen, and it happened fast. Like, I get that. But you got to make an adjustment, as you mentioned. You got to be watching the game and understanding spin on. You know, that's the thing that Juan Soto brought to the Yankees in spring training, and Aaron Boone focused on it with the rest of the team. And he told the rest of the team, you need to watch Soto. You need to watch his at-bats. You need to learn. We're not chasing out of the zone. If they're going to beat us, they got to beat us in the strike zone, not out of the zone. Blanco was able to throw the no-hitter out of the strike zone. A lot of his outs came out of the strike zone, and they weren't able to hold up. Look, I'm not going to take anything away from Blanco. It was a very good outing, and the secondary pitches were ridiculously good. But, you know, that being said, Toronto doesn't have enough hitters. You know, when the Varsho trade was made, you know, I was very critical about it at the time because I said, look, I like Varsho's power. I like his defense, but he can't hit. I like Kevin Kiermaier. It's a treat to watch him run balls down in center field, but he can't hit. Right? Kevin Biggio, I love him. Great makeup, high IQ, can't hit. Kiner Falefa, great defense, can't hit. Texas knew it. The Yankees know it. So you can't do that. You got to get hitters. I mean, look at Tampa. Look at what they do, because they're not having the superstars. This isn't a matter of spending money. This is a matter of – and the Giants do the same thing. It's a matter – they and Tampa do the same thing, which they say we're going to have an average or above-average major league player at every position no matter what, because that allows, when you get your stars, to take your team to the next level, right? If you just use the theory of using what wins above replacement is supposed to be. If you have an average player at every position, and then you have one a 5-WAR player in Bichette, a 4-WAR player in Guerrero, now you're 9 games over 500, right? So now all of a sudden you're an 85-win team. Now all of a sudden you have some pitching, and they're 3 WARs, and then all of a sudden you're up to 90 wins. But what happens if you have minus WAR players and you have guys that are dragging you down, that takes away from your star players, and it makes you basically not competitive. And I look at Toronto, they're a fourth or fifth place team for me.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
They're not a first, second, or third place team. They're fourth or fifth. And yeah. And that's with really good pitching and really good defense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jim Bowden is MLB analyst and insider with MLB Network Radio and The Athletic. Joey Votto is going about his business in Florida. I believe John Schneider said yesterday he's taking some defensive drills
more.
He's doing more. Yeah. I mean, obviously he didn't make the roster because he rolled his ankle on it, stepping on a bat in the dugout, which I still don't know how that happens, but anyhow, that's beside the point. What do you think Joey's got in the tank?
He'll be able to help coach your young hitters.
Mm.
He'll be able to really talk to them about hitting and help them develop. He did a really good job with the Reds players. He did. All those young players, all those young hitters they have. Joey Votto was really instrumental in their developing, and they paid attention to him, and he's a great teammate. His days are over as a player. I mean, not that he can't come off the bench and against certain pitchers, you know, get on base, but really he's done. But I would want him in my clubhouse. Perhaps he ends up on the coaching staff for 2025, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think he would be a valuable asset to help improve the players that are there. To me, that's what he would bring to the table right now.
Jim, let's move over to the National League real quick. And the worst team in my mind in the National League is the Rockies. Where do you think the Rockies end up? How in any name do they get better? Like, you watch them play, I just don't see it. Like, I don't understand how they ever get better again, because I want to see them better. Like, I think when they're better, baseball's better. I think, anyway, I like watching them, especially where they play their home games. Do you see them ever getting better?
Well, I mean, right now we have Oakland, the White Sox, and the Rockies are going to lose over 300 games between the three of them. And they're really bad teams that are really embarrassing our sport, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say positively about the Rockies that I cannot say about Oakland or the White Sox is the Rockies literally have four or five really good position players in their farm system that are going to get there by September probably and impact next year. And if all goes well with Chase Dollander, perhaps they have a top of the rotation type starter en route. So I do like the system. Bill Schmidt's done a good job. It's just not here yet, but it's getting close. So I think there's some positive signs there. I like the trade for Nolan Jones last year. And it wasn't just because he was 20 homers, 20 steals, but he hit fastballs, breaking balls, change of all of them equally, which usually means that what he did last year wasn't just rookie success. It can withstand it. But they don't have enough pitching. If you don't pitch, you can't win at all. Like, no chance. And the Rockies, they don't have any pitching. I mean, you saw their opening day starter, Kyle Freeland, get absolutely destroyed by the Diamondbacks, and that's their best guy. Now, at some point, Germán Márquez will come back, and hopefully he'll be healthy. But, you know, when you look at Oakland, the White Sox, and the Rockies, the reason they're going to be the three worst teams in baseball is they just don't have any pitching that can keep them in games, like none. So, you know, I know it's a challenge at Coors. I do. I do think the offense is coming. I think the farm system has enough if they develop properly, but you still got to find a better way to be more competitive on the bump, and that's something Bill Schmidt hadn't figured out yet.
Yeah.
Last question from us before we let you go. Going into the offseason, I thought there'd be a feeding frenzy for Jordan Montgomery, even when the whole thing with the Boris Kleins was out there. I just thought at the end of the day, he would be the guy that, you know, somebody would commit to him longer term, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Why did he, why wasn't there more interest in him? And, you know, especially from a Yankees or a Red Sox standpoint.
I think one of the problems was Aaron Nola got 7 years at 172 in December, just before the winter meetings. And Montgomery's younger. He's coming off performing on the big stage. Has less wear and tear on the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I think the expectations for Jordan and Scott Boras was that they would be in that range. And it never materialized. And then as the market kind of collapsed after Yamamoto got his money and the Dodgers spent their billion, then you started having some luxury tax issues. And teams like the Yankees, their only interest is if they could defer it. Like in the 1930s, so they didn't want to lose the draft picks and pay. They would have had to pay 100% tax. So if they signed them for the 30 they could have gotten him for. It would have cost them $60 million for 1 year of Jordan Montgomery, and that just doesn't make sense for anybody, right? It just doesn't. So that hurt that. And then there were teams like Washington and Detroit that you know, Washington's GM, Mike Rizzo, wanted to give him 5 years, 125, but the owner's like, you know what, I'm at least a year away from doing that. Let's get Corbin off the books before I put more money on another starting pitcher here. Mm-hmm. And so they decided to wait, and I think what Boris and the group said is, you know what, this market didn't turn out well for us. It's okay. Let's go. Let's get a couple of years on the books, and we'll opt out after this year, and we'll go back on the market and see if the market's any better. There were eight teams that either kept the payroll the same or dropped it. Is that going to happen again next year? I don't know. But do I think there were teams that made a mistake for not offering Montgomery five at 125? Sure. I think a team like the Cardinals, a team like the Brewers, a team like the Reds, and for the Diamondbacks, what a great job by Mike Hazen to stay in touch the whole time and be able to pull this off. I mean, they're going to be relevant all year now.
Yep.
Jim, really good of you to join us. You've been very generous with your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Take care. Jim Bowden is MLB analyst and insider with MLB Network Radio, The Athletic, and CBS Sports.
Thoughts on the Jays lineup, what he said? Harsh?
No.
True?
True.
Just doesn't see the light at the end of the tunnel.
No, I think we've both kind of believed, you know, despite everything that's been said about offensive approaches and all this, I think we both kind of believe that for this team to have success, the lineup is going to have to overachieve a bit. It almost seems to me like it's the same thing as last year. I just look at this lineup and I go, one more hitter, one more impactful hitter.
But he's got to be a really, really good hitter.
Yeah, but I mean, an impactful hitter. And it was the same thing last year. I looked at the team and of course, all we ended up hearing after last year was all the underlying numbers weren't reflected by the numbers put up, the performance in the field. I kind of fear we're going down that same path again this year. I'm puzzled that, despite everything that was said, I'm puzzled that they could let happen to them last night happen as easily as it did. And I'm also a little concerned about the feast or famine aspect. 9-2, winning 9-2, losing 5-1, winning 8-2, losing 8-2, losing 10-0. Like, yeah, it's only five games in, but... it's either here or here.
I have to be honest with you when you ask me about the approaches and why they can't do the in-game thing, right? Why this guy's throwing you this, it's glove side. He's doing it a lot.
It's probably easier than I understand. I didn't play. So I'm looking at it. It's probably easier for me to say that than someone who played.
You would certainly think that. I didn't want to buy into they're not good enough to make the in-game adjustment. Listening to Jim from the outside looking in, he seems to think they're not good enough. Like that's the reason why they're not. That's the reason why I asked the question. If you're in the front office and you're watching a game and you're thinking to yourself, I see what they're doing. I see what Blanco's doing. Yeah. Why can't you fix it? Why can't you make it tougher on him to get you out? I saw it. A Jays fan saw it. Well, why can't you do it? Maybe it's just the fact that they can't do it. Like, it's as simple as moving around the box to make it uncomfortable for him to get you out. Sounds simple. But in game, maybe they're not capable of doing that. And I just didn't want to come on the show after the game last night and actually say it out loud. But boy, listen to Jim talk. I mean, it makes sense. Like, some of the names he said out loud.
Yeah. This is not a young team.
It's just not.
I mean, I'm sorry. I understand people say, well, you know, Vladdy's still relatively young. No, he's not. Not the way the game is played now. Look at the age of guys that are coming in and playing right now. Vladdy's not young. And he isn't. Bo's not young. Yeah. I mean, we keep having this thing, well, they're actually young in terms of experience. No, they're not. They're not young. And got a lot of at-bats.
Yeah. They're old enough to not allow
Blanco. And they've had years, and this, I'm going to accept Bo's kind of the exception here because he's been pretty consistent.
Man.
Vladdy's had a year where he's had success. It's not like these guys haven't had a taste of success.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, listen, Vladdy, I think we believe, we like the version of Vladdy we saw coming out of spring training more than the version we saw all of last year. So I'm still okay with that.
Yep.
And I'm not going to overreact to
five games.
To five
and
games.
And one game.
One way or another.
Yeah.
But.
Sort of looks like last year, though. When they get beat, it looked like it looked last year.
That was, as I said, that was the most comfortable no-hitter I've seen throw by pitch.
It was pretty easy.
It was comfortable.
He wasn't sweating.
No. I mean, it was hot there, but I mean.
Not really.
There's a difference. Someone told me there's a difference between perspiration and sweat. I was told that one time. He was not sweating. He made the point. The old baseball line about it was like he was playing catch with Diaz. That's what it looked like to me.
Absolutely.
So, you know, let's see what is in store tonight with Jose Berríos on the mound. Against Framber Valdez, and the problem is it's hard not to overreact when early in the season you see signs of the same thing that made you pound your head against the wall last year.
Yep.
And that's human nature, and I'm sure there are coaches who are, it doesn't matter what anybody says, you're human beings. And you look at, when you lose games the way you lost games last year and it's a new season, you kind of, it gets old.
Yeah, sort of, if Blanco can do that, what would make you think that you could win a playoff series facing some better pitch? I mean, this is awfully early
April
in the season.
2nd. It is.
It absolutely is, and we're not going to do this
very often.
But,
better not.
But, yeah.
Better not.
But, you know, it'd be nice to see a guy crowd a plate once in a while and take a slider away from somebody. Wouldn't you like to see that? I'd raise my hand. It'd be an easier conversation. At least you'd be a tougher out. How about that?
Just make it harder.
It would be harder. How about that?
Hazel May is our Blue Jays and MLB reporter with Sportsnet. She is in Houston for the second game of the series tonight against the Astros. And, we're going to be joined by Hazel May when we come back. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A10 will be the first pitch tonight from Minute Maid Park in Houston. The Toronto Blue Jays taking on the Houston Astros in the second of the three-game series. Buck and Dan will have the call. Hazel May will be the sideline reporter for the game, one of our favorites, and she'll join us in a few minutes. A reminder that Blair and Barker will be doing Blue Jays talk following the game. We had somebody call up last night, I think it was Catherine, who asked the question about why the Jays didn't, and I'm mentioning this because it did make me kind of chuckle, but she said, you know, why didn't the Jays kind of act a little better at
cheer,
the end of the
cheer
game.
Cheer for the guy. Cheer he just, he guy. Just,
him,
he just took you behind the woodshed.
Yeah.
I guess that's a fair question. It wouldn't be the easiest thing to do, you know?
No. You do see every now and then you'll see teams, some players, especially players who have had a bad game, do that. I think a lot of times guys are just waiting to see how the dude reacts and see, you know, is he going to do something that, is going to kind of piss us off But
baseball
in a case like that, because it'll make him play harder the next day.
A nice wink.
In a case like that, if I'm the Jays, I want to get, like I said, I wouldn't have even showered. I wouldn't have taken my uniform off. I would have gone right back to the hotel and pulled the covers over my head.
Whatever helps you hit a double to right center off a slider away. Whatever helps.
Mm.
It would be tough, though, to stand out there and go, way to go, Blanco. I've never heard of you, but way to go.
What's your name?
Ronald? Now I remember
Ronald?
Your name now.
Yeah, now
that's pretty good change-up.
Let's bring in Hazel May from Houston. Hazel, thanks for doing this. We trust that you're keeping well. And before we talk about the Jays, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Larry Lucchino. Now, Larry Lucchino passed away today at the age of 78. You know, if you look at his CV, he was a longtime baseball executive with the Padres, the Orioles, and the Red Sox. But if you really want to know about Larry Lucchino, he was the driving force behind a lot of the retro ballpark things we saw in baseball. He was a guy that, in addition to being a club president, Bud Selig relied on. He was a troubleshooter. He was a guy that always was able to deal with Donald Fehr. He was, behind the scenes, a very, very important figure, not just for the Red Sox when they, you know, they broke the drought, but for baseball in general. You got to know him on a personal side from your work with Nesson. Can you tell us a little bit about him? Because I told Kevin a story about how I, you know, Larry would cry if he saw an empty reporter's notebook. It would make him break down and cry because he saw an empty reporter's notebook as opportunity. And I had a couple of instances where he was just so good to me, and he didn't have to be good to me. Tell us a little bit about him.
He always went out of his way to, first of all, Jeff, you know, when you talk about people that love baseball, it oozed out of him. Like, he loved talking about the fans. He loved talking about the ballpark. He loved talking about the game. He loved talking about the players, about players' families. Like, he just loved everything about baseball. And I don't know if too many people know this story, but Tom Werner was instrumental in moving me from Toronto to work for Nesson in Boston. He was not only part of the Red Sox ownership, but he was also an integral part of the broadcast and the network at Nesson. And so he brought me over to Boston, but because he had a lot of obligations in Los Angeles and California, he was always flying back and forth. I never got to see Tom a lot. And then Mr. Henry was also busy with other businesses as well. So Mr. Lucchino was always around, and Jeff, he was always available. He was always at the ballpark, part of ceremonies. He did a lot of charity events. Like, to me, in my time there in Boston, he was the face, the spokesperson for the Red Sox. And for me, on a personal note, I knew nobody, not a soul, when I first came to Nesson. So outside of the people that I worked with at Nesson, one of the people that really kind of welcomed me and whenever they saw me on the field would go out of their way and kind of make a beeline to come over and say hello and ask me how I'm doing and how the move is going and how my transition was going was Larry Lucchino. And he was just, to me, just a lovely, lovely man who loved baseball and loved people. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that on opening day was known to, and you know, back in 04 when the Red Sox were just, you know, the toughest ticket to get in town, he would on opening day routinely come out of his office, and the offices at Nesson, the headquarters were at Fenway Park. He would come out of his office, look at the huge lineup of people waiting to buy tickets or, you know, standing room only tickets, and he would literally pull out of from his pocket Red Sox tickets for opening day and start handing them out to the people at the front of the line who had been waiting there for days and maybe a week, like days. But that was Larry. He was all about the fan experience. He was all about baseball. And, you know, it was really saddened me to hear that he had passed, because in the years that I had left Nesson, he had gone on to be president of the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. But, and I hadn't seen him in years. I've definitely followed up and asked people how he was doing and his health, but just a remarkable, remarkable man. And for people that enjoy these retro ballparks, you can thank Larry Lucchino.
Yeah, he was the driving force behind it. His, as I said, his impact on the game goes well, well beyond his CV. And those are some really nice thoughts. I said I had very limited experience, but they were great experiences. I always came away thinking that I had his attention. For the 10 or 15 minutes I was interviewing him, I had his attention.
Absolutely. And he made those of us think we were, you know, the people that he came down from his offices and made a beeline just to speak to you. Yep. Like a lot of times he would, hi, and I would say hi, but then look over my shoulder thinking there was someone behind me more important that he was saying hello to. Yep. But he genuinely wanted to know how I was, you know, making out as far as how was my move and how was I, you know, enjoying Boston and New England. And, hey, don't forget to visit this restaurant if you wanted to go for brunch. Like, he was just a lovely, lovely man.
Hazel, do we have any idea yet as to whether Bo Bichette will be in the lineup today? I know Buck and Dan said yesterday that he told them anyhow he felt an awful lot better than he did the day before.
Yeah, he did feel better. And I asked him, I said, do we know if he's ever had this kind of an issue before? And John Schneider said, no, not to his knowledge. And I said, did he just wake up one day? And he said, yeah, that's basically what happened. It wasn't on a swing or it wasn't anything that he did working out. He just woke up and, you know, had a cranky neck, as Schneider put it. And he's day to day, but he was feeling much better than he was the previous day. Now, I did ask Schneider, is it a luxury to have a guy like Ernie Clement where, you know, you don't have to rush Bichette along to hurry up and get back on the field? And he said, absolutely. He said the fact that Ernie Clement has been playing well, not only at the plate, but defensively, making that jump throw to Vladdy the other day was incredible. It had everybody, I looked over the dugout and everybody was, oh, whoa. Like everybody was like just, you know, impressed with the way he's handled himself on the field and at the plate. But because he's playing so well, I think they're giving Bichette as much time as he needs to get back.
Hayes, how do you think Bowden Francis handled the tough start last night?
Well, I can tell you what he told me. He came out, and I know we've talked about this on the broadcast. He's a different cat. I mean, he's a guy from, I think, like the 50s and 60s. Kind of, he loves the vintage clothing. He's got that, you know, that chill. He's very zen. Like, he comes out for his post-game interview in socks, which he normally does. He's always in socks and or bare feet. And Schneider said, you know, for him, regretfully, sometimes he's barefooted on the team plane, wow. Which was it's always kind of interesting.
That is.
But he came out and he was very I asked him, can you take any positives from what happened today and tonight? And he said, well, for one, he felt like he threw a lot of strikes. And if you look at the numbers, he may be right. I think it was close to 80%. Mm-hmm. He felt that he didn't really kind of let up at all. He kept attacking them. The one thing he did say is he felt like he lacked a little bit of what he called awareness. And I came back to him and I said, what does that mean? I said, does it have anything to do with making adjustments along the way? And he said, yeah. He said he knew that the Astros knew that he'd like to pitch high in the zone. And they were all over his heater, he said, up in that area. And what he had maybe thought he could have done was make more of an adjustment to, in his words, you know, keep the fastball down so that they can respect it up. So that's one thing he thought is like he kind of lacked that awareness. But he was really happy with his curveball. He thought his emotions were kept in control. He felt his breathing was good. He said emotionally he thought he handled himself well. But obviously when you look at the results, it definitely aren't the kind of results he would like in his first major league start. But he said it was a growing experience for him. He's just going to get ready for the next one. But all in all, he had hoped, you know, he could lead the team to a win, but he did try to walk away with a couple of positives. It was interesting that John Schneider agreed with Francis. He said that the Astros had a specific plan with stuff up in the zone, so he credited them for really executing that game plan. So they'll regroup with Francis. They still have a lot of trust in his stuff and his confidence. So we'll see. At the end of the day, Schneider ended his post-game availability by saying you got to tip your cap to Blanco, who threw a no-hitter, which, as we all know, it's really difficult to do. So, you know, he threw an outstanding game. I think Schneider said he thought his changeup was outstanding. Of course, you wish the offense could have put up a little bit more of a fight, but when it's your night, I think it's your night, and it was Blanco's night for sure.
Yeah, it's a game of adjustments. Anybody you've talked to about Jose Berríos, is there a game plan that they think tonight will make him a little bit better? Will he use the cutter more? Have you heard any of that? Will he, you know, want to pitch down more? Is there some kind of game plan that he'll use tonight, you think?
You know, I haven't heard anything as of yet. Of course, we've all known that the cutter is one of his newest weapon, particularly when you're facing guys like Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez, yeah. Two really big bats, left-handed bats in particular. I was looking at a stat that our producer Chris Black gave me, and it had Jose Berríos gave up the most home runs since 2021 to left-handed batters with, I think it was 59 home runs. So when you see something like that and you're facing an Astros team that have two of the biggest left-handed boppers in all of the game, you're going to want to add something that'll hopefully contain them. And you guys know that cutter against left-handed batters, it'll at least, you know, keep them honest so that they have to look at both sides of the plate because they know the cutter is going to come in on their hands. So I think you'll see that. I don't know how often you'll see it. We looked back at when Jose started the game against the Rays. I believe he only threw one cutter,
yep.
Maybe two. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. So I don't know how often he'll use it, but he's got it in his back pocket. So we'll see how he goes about, you know, executing his game plan tonight.
Absolutely.
With or without it.
Hazel, we're going to let you go and spend time with some better people.
Speak for yourself, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I was looking at the clock going, geez, these guys are dull.
Thanks so much, Hazel.
Thanks, Hazel.
Travel
bye,
safely.
Guys.
Be
right,
well.
See
Hazel
bye.
May. She, Buck, and Dan will have the call of the game tonight. Game 2 of the Astros series, or the Jay series against the Astros. You know, Jeff Blum said something yesterday that interested me. He talked about how the Yankees were really aggressive with the Astros and really went after them with fastballs.
Yep.
Could that work? I try to figure out how is that a template for Jose Berríos?
Absolutely. It's fastball command. It'll always be that way. I'll give you an example. What if Bowden Francis last night had a hit his spot's glove side? Like when he tried to go away to a righty into a lefty, think the result would have been different? I do. That is the most important part, right? It's not always about throwing it to your strength. It's about getting it to where you want it to end up. And if the catcher, you know, sets up away and wants to really bear down and get ahead or put somebody away on a ball away, we talk about that glove side facing the Blue Jays lineup all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's the how hard it is to make adjustments and how mechanically sound as a hitter you have to be on the ball away. So, absolutely. That's what I said. Now, he's going to crowd some of the lefties, right? I do think glove side into lefties in this park is a big deal. You know, you don't want to let them get their arms extended. The misses in there have to be really good. The front hip two-seamer will be a key. You know, a back door in the two-seamer to the righties, that's glove side again, will be key, right? The lanes for him, you know, how consistent he is with his release point is going to be huge. So, yeah, he's got to get ahead. I mean, that's the most important part. He's been better at that. And be efficient enough. Don't overthrow the slurve. That'll be a big deal. You know, occasionally use the changeup. Don't abuse it. If he throws the cutter, you know, he can throw it in odd counts, maybe get back in a count, maybe a surprise pitch to a good hitter that's not looking for that in a certain count. So he's a smart guy. You know, just be good at that. He'll be all right.
I didn't ask you this. Have you been part of a team that's been no hit?
I have not. No. No, I've had.
Okay,
I've been
well,
on
there
some,
goes my follow-up.
I've been on some teams with, you know, in the minor leagues have one hit us and you're yelling and screaming about adjustments early in the season when it's cold. I mean, that's most of the time when it would happen. It's not normally middle of the season, minor leagues. I mean, it's colder in the minor leagues. It's the big leagues. No matter where you're playing.
What happens in a dugout when it's...
It stinks. It's embarrassing.
Just when you're just
when you're not getting
hit.
In the big leagues, you're facing the elite guys. Sometimes you expect it. Like, you know, you can name some elite guys when they got it going and they're locating, and, you know, DeGroms of the world who can do it with two pitches and really attack that with some power and finesse and location and late break and those kind of things. You know, you're not so disappointed when it's those guys.
Right.
You know, and then it's other guys early in the season, like Blanco. Again, I'm not taking anything away from him.
I don't want anybody to think we are.
Absolutely not. He had great stuff. Like, yeah, that changeup, it was elite last night. He just was feeling it. But let's be honest. The battles just weren't there. And I think the Blue Jays walking away can say that to themselves. You know, we just didn't do enough offensively when it comes to just being a tough out. Mm-hmm. You could get me out. I'm choking up. I don't choke up. But today I'm going to, because this guy's feeling it. I think occasionally you have to have that. And to Jim's point, maybe they're not good enough to do that. Hopefully Jim's wrong, and hopefully the conversations that we've had today that are a little harsher than we want to have them this early in the season, we're all wrong. Hopefully they make some adjustments. They'll be a little bit better, and they'll hit some balls and be some tougher outs, because I do think to make the playoffs with the way the American League is a little better this year, they got to be better. Offensively, they got to carry it for a period of time. Can they do that? And the only way in my mind they're going to do that is to be tougher outs when a guy that you don't expect to be good is good that day. And can they do it? That's the question, Jeff. I don't think anybody has the answer for that. Do you? Because I don't.
No.
I don't either.
That is the, by the way, was the third one-pitcher no-hitter at Minute Maid Park. I understand, again, it's pitcher-specific more than park-specific, but I've got to think that makes it even more frustrating when you're being
right
no-hit and you've
ball
got
carries,
that.
Ball carries to right there, too. The ball, you know, that short porch and left there. I mean, it's hard. Like, you got to be on top of your stuff. You got to be arm speed on the changeup was really good. You know, he established that slider away early to those righties, which is a key against the Blue Jays. So we'll see. Like, I hope it's just not the middle of the order. John has come on our show and said, sort of the first four guys are going to take us where we ultimately are going to go. I hope not. You're going to need a collection of a bunch of people. When you ask me who's the MVP, who has to be the MVP, and I named like 10 people, I still believe that. Like, it's going to have to be a collection of a bunch of people that are going to have better at-bats. And can they do it? Can they just get tired of getting out the same way over and over and over again? It's outside the box sometimes, and it's uncomfortable. But sometimes you got to do it. Can they do it? Can they just buy into enough of this? Had enough. I'm going to do something different. In a game. During a game. I will see.
8 o'clock will be the first pitch tonight.
8:10. Yeah, it's the second time you've said that. Like TikTok, 8:10. Buddy. 8:10.
No, 8:10.
It's people, not the first pitch. It's a lie.
I want people to tune in at 8:00.
Or tune in at 7:30. I think Blue Jays Central starts.
Blue Jays Central on TV. But, you know,
it's not first pitch. It's 8:00. You're lying to the people.
Well, 8:00. I mean, it is. It may not be 8:10. It could be 8:11.
Well,
it could be
easily not. I mean, it's to the T because, you know, it's narrow, Jeff.
Anyhow. First pitch is, just to be on the safe side, join us at 8 o'clock. So, it's always good to join early. Better to be early than late. Blair and Barker will be along following the game for Blue Jays
winning
Talk.
Winning edition.
Winning
Jays
edition.
Talk.
I feel a winning edition of Blue Jays Talk here.
I don't.
I really do.
I mean, Framber Valdez is standing a little taller, and he ain't throwing it as hard. That means it's going to move more.
I got a good feeling about tonight. I think
Barrios. If I could cross my fingers.
Barrios will be the tonic. He will address this situation.
Can they score 5 runs?
Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, they've scored 9. It's like I said, it's either or, right?
Yeah.
I guess. It's either or with these guys. I guess the good thing, you know, they say you're never as good as when you're at your best, and you're never as bad as when you're at your worst. So we've kind of seen.
Sounds like you're losing.
That's what that sounds like.
That's not like it. That's what that sounds like.
Yeah, that does sound
that's
like.
That's when you have that conversation.
I'm reaching.
You are.
I'm reaching. I'm reaching for stuff.
I got a good feeling about tonight. I do, but it's...
I got a good feeling. 5-5, baby. 5-5. The drive for 5.
Okay.
All right. 8:10 will be the first pitch.
There you go.
The Jays and Astros play the second of their 3-game series. Join Blair and Barker following the game for Blue Jays Talk. We'll be back tomorrow from 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet, if you're listening via podcast, leave Mr. Barker a lovely 5-star rating and review. It means so much to him. Enjoy the baseball.